Today is Wednesday, February 16th. NATO defense ministers met in Brussels and say that they've seen no signs of Russia de-escalating the situation along Ukraine's border.
We do not see any sign of de-escalation on the ground. No withdrawals of troops or equipment.
Plus, as tensions continue, what's life like in Western Ukraine?
They feel at the moment an information overload. They're highly anxious, and there's nothing they can do about things.
And what are the concerns of Ukraine's LGBTQ plus community? We'll have these stories and a whole lot more ahead. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, says that he and other defense ministers have not seen evidence of a withdrawal of Russian forces from the Ukrainian border.
We do not see any sign of de-escalation on the ground. No withdrawals of troops or equipment. This may, of course, change. Therefore, today, ministers decided to develop options for further strengthen NATO's deterrence and defense, including to consider establishing new NATO battle groups in Central and Eastern and Southeastern Europe. The new normal is that Russia has demonstrated that it really is willing to contest some of the fundamental principles for our security.
The NATO Secretary General's remarks comes a day after U.S. President Joe Biden addressed the American people, saying that while he would not send U.S. forces to fight in Ukraine, Washington is working closely with its allies.
Two paths are still open. For the sake of historic responsibility, Russia and the United States share for global stability, for the sake of our common future, to choose diplomacy. But let there be no doubt. If Russia commits this breach by invading Ukraine, responsible nations around the world will not hesitate to respond. We do not stand for freedom. Where it is at risk today will surely pay a steeper price tomorrow.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb is traveling with U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who is attending the NATO meeting in Brussels. I asked her about what NATO officials are seeing on the ground.
Well, they're saying that they would like diplomacy to rule the day. They want Russia to back down. But in order for Russia to back down, they have to do the actions. They have to move their troops. And Jens Stoltenberg said that at this point, they've seen no de-escalation on the ground. In fact, troop numbers have increased and they're bringing in, Russia is bringing in more troops, he said today. And so the NATO alliance, they have to be focused on being prepared for this invasion, should it happen or not. And so they are going through and trying to beef up their defenses along the eastern flank. And you've seen that happen bit by bit. You've seen the U.S. bring in forces. They've brought in about 5,000 additional troops into Poland. 1,000 were moved into Romania. You've seen the U.K. bring in troops on the eastern flank. You've seen Germany bring in troops on the eastern flank. You've also seen the Netherlands bring in F-35 fighter jets, should they be needed to patrol the skies, because if there's an invasion, then the eastern flank of NATO is going to be much more vulnerable and they're going to need to defend their territorial integrity. And so you've seen all of these things happening to better prepare should an invasion occur. But the big takeaway is that no one in NATO wants this to happen. And as President Joe Biden said, the international community is going to frown upon this. There are going to be extreme sanctions, extreme cost for Russia to do this. And they are hoping and they are hopeful that Russia is starting to listen. And you've seen Russia go up to podiums and say that they're going to change course, say that they want diplomacy, say that they're pulling back troops. But until they start doing it, NATO is going to continue planning as it does to beef up its defenses.
Carla, you mentioned NATO members beefing up their defenses. This, of course, follows the United States deploying additional troops to Poland to help bolster NATO defenses. I was wondering, have the NATO defense ministers there who are in Brussels discussing the situation given any clear indications on what they may do if Russia conducts aggressive moves on the ground?
well, the big response is the sanctions. And that's what they're focusing on, because they have reiterated time and again that the U.S. is not going to go into NATO and fight Russia on Ukrainian territory. They're sending aid to Ukraine, not just the U.S. Other NATO countries have also sent aid into Ukraine, but they're not going to fight Russia on Ukrainian soil. Now, should Russia decide to go into Poland or Romania or Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, that's a different story, because those are NATO allies and the U.S. has a commitment. It's called an Article 5 commitment, where all NATO countries have agreed that an attack on one is an attack on all. And so Russia would be playing a very different game if it decided to not only invade Ukraine, but move further to the west.
Carla, I wanted to ask you about the secretary's upcoming schedule. He, of course, is in Brussels right now. It's the first of 2 days of meetings with NATO. But what's next for the secretary? And also, do we know anything about the upcoming discussions that these defense ministers will be undertaking? Because yesterday, the State Duma in Russia encouraged Russian President Vladimir Putin to recognize two areas in the Donbas region as independent states.
Well, he's got one more day of talks here at NATO. He's going to be discussing further plans to prepare. And they're also going to be discussing what Russia is doing. You know, as you saw, the State Department today came out and condemned Russia's parliament trying to urge Russian President Vladimir Putin to basically say that Ukraine's eastern are independent states. And now what that could set up is that could set up Putin to say, well, I didn't invade Ukraine. I came into independent states that want to be a part of Russia. So that definitely is something that the State Department is aware of, that they might be trying to work, and has immediately condemned. Here in NATO, they're watching that very closely with leaders, and he will also be meeting with some troops on the ground, some of those troops that have been deployed to Poland as a result of what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. And then lastly, he will head to Lithuania. He will not only meet with Lithuanian leaders, but he's also going to be sitting down with the defense ministers from other Baltic states, Estonia and Latvia as well.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. She's currently traveling with U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin in Brussels. Carla, thank you.
Of course.
Following their meeting on Wednesday, NATO defense ministers released a statement that reads in part, quote, "We have made substantive proposals to Russia to enhance the security of all nations in the Euro-Atlantic region and await a response," end quote. In an interview on the ABC News Good Morning America program, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that there has been no change in the Russian posture along Ukraine's border.
Unfortunately, there's a difference between what Russia says and what it does. And what we're seeing is no meaningful pullback. He can pull the trigger. He could pull it today. He could pull it tomorrow. He could pull it next week. The forces are there if he wants to renew aggression against Ukraine.
Secretary Blinken's comments come a day after he spoke with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov about the ongoing situation. And to learn more about Blinken's discussions, I spoke with VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain.
We have seen what was a very unusual diplomatic offensive, or sort of a middle of the week, with Secretary Blinken doing 3 or 4 different major TV interviews. He was just speaking to a virtual summit for democracy and said at the beginning of his remarks that he would have to cut them short because the president had called him over to the White House for a meeting. And this was a meeting that was not on Blinken's schedule. So we're all sort of thinking, what is this about? This is also about Russia, Ukraine. So there is a sense of urgency. I mean, we're hearing from Ukraine that they are under a massive cyber attack on Wednesday. And we also had a strong statement out by Secretary Blinken condemning the Russian Duma passing a resolution appealing to recognize the Donetsk and Luhansk republics in eastern Ukraine as independent. And the State Department condemned that and said that would completely undermine the Minsk process for peace between Ukraine and Russia, and said that if Putin basically approves this, if this goes into effect, then it would provoke a swift and firm response from the U.S. in coordination with all of its NATO partners. So we have a fever pitch of things going here, and I would say at this point it does not look like any kind of de-escalation at all.
Cindy, can you wind the clock back to yesterday when the secretary had his conversation with Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov? What do we know about what the pair spoke about?
Right. Well, we don't know very much. And it would seem that the State Department perhaps played it down a bit, wanting people not to hope that there was a big breakthrough or anything, saying that the last time that they had their conversation, they had agreed to keep in frequent and more frequent coordination with each other. So basically, Blinken said, you know, we were speaking with Lavrov again, and again, they have been signaling that the U.S. is prepared. Either way, U.S. is certainly prepared for diplomacy with Russia and to hold security talks on military exercises in Europe and on arms talks and everything of that nature that could benefit both sides, but that the U.S. is also prepared if Russia takes further aggressive action against Ukraine.
Has there been any indication either from the State Department or the White House on the possibility of future discussions either with Russian President Vladimir Putin or with Secretary Blinken's counterpart, Foreign Minister Lavrov?
No, and the White House Press Secretary Psaki was asked about that on Tuesday, if there were any further plans specifically between President Biden and President Putin, and she said no. So it looks like that is on ice at the moment. I mean, as I'm sure you and your listeners know, we've seen a parade of different diplomatic foreign ministers and heading to both Ukraine and Moscow this week. I saw that that the Italian foreign minister is in Ukraine, and it's keeping going on. But it looks like right now there are no plans for at least not a Biden-Putin meeting or conversation.
Cindy Stain is VOA's diplomatic correspondent. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Outside the grand 19th century city hall in Lviv, the capital of Western Ukraine, where Western embassies hurriedly relocated consular staff from Kyiv earlier this week, the streets are bustling. Jamie Detmer is in the city and shared with me his observations as the country celebrated Unity Day.
Well, it's rather affected across most of Ukraine, from what I can understand. Most people treated it as an ordinary day. The first person I talked to this morning was saying, I think it's going to be closed today because it's a unity day. It's a new national holiday. And the response to that was, presidents come and go. They name this day and that day a new day. It's not a religious holiday. We just have to get on with life. And really, that was the sentiment I saw and heard across the city. This was a normal day. People going to work, people coming back from work, shops open, government buildings open. So really, Unity Day, there were a few more flags around, but people weren't making a big effort. There were some staged events around Ukraine by the armed forces, by the government, with flash mobs singing the national anthem. But, you know, for the vast bulk of people, they got on with things. They got on with their everyday life. That doesn't mean that they're not patriotic. They are. But they feel at the moment an information overload. They're highly anxious. And there's nothing they can do about things. So best just to carry on as per normal. The Ukrainian normal, they call it.
Jamie, you mentioned a flurry of activity, lots of things, sometimes an information overload. And Wednesday has certainly been one of those days with NATO defense ministers meeting in Brussels, cyber attack being reported in the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv. People who are out and about that you're speaking to, what are they making out of all the attention being placed on the tension along Ukraine's border with Russia?
Well, they're bewildered because they're hearing too many reports. It's been going on for a long time. Their position is they've been enduring a threat for 8 years, since 2014, since the warfare in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine. Until about a week ago, I think that they were calm. I think they became more anxious when they saw Western embassies relocating to Lviv, when they heard about airlines cancelling flights, and then just the sheer accumulation of the reporting unnerved them. So there's high anxiety. But at the same time, they feel very impotent. There's nothing that they can do in their personal lives to change things, which is why we get this kind of rather stoical Ukrainian shrug. What can I do about it?
On that note, Jamie, I was wondering if you've had the opportunity to discuss with anyone about the United States and other nations switching their diplomatic presence in Ukraine from Kyiv to Lviv.
Yes, I think people on the whole were reacted very badly to it because they felt it was a demoralizing act. Many people said that to me. They found it odd if you, one hand, are declaring solidarity and then moving your diplomats out. They thought that sends a mixed signal, really, of how committed they are to Ukraine. It was an anxious moment for them, and I think it did contribute to this slightly changed attitude from a stoical calm to stoical anxiety is probably the best way of describing it.
Jamie, while I have you on the phone, I wanted to see if you've had discussions with folks there in Lviv about Russia's request that Ukraine not be allowed to join NATO. I ask that because, of course, the defense ministers are in Brussels at a NATO conference right now.
Well, I think that most Ukrainians feel that they do. They want this path to continue towards them becoming more of an integral part of Europe. I think they probably feel, and people have said that to me, more so in the last few years as they come under threat from Russia. It would give them a certain feeling of security if they were NATO members or if they were even more closely integrated with the EU.
Jamie Detmer is currently reporting from Lviv, Ukraine. Jamie, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Steve.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says that every day is a struggle for survival for hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians and Russians living along the border between the two countries. Recently, a delegation from the ICRC visited the Ukraine-Russia border. VOA's Carol Van Dam asked the spokesperson for the group, Alexander Vlasenko, about the aid the agencies provided.
The hottest period of time, there were 2014 and 15, and during this period of time, we have more people to assist. Without direct assistance, I mean distribution of our food parcels and hygiene parcels. Probably in this period of time, we had about 80,000 people monthly, because we do it every month. Now we reduce this number to about 25,000 per month, and we are only supporting those vulnerable, very vulnerable people living in very vulnerable places, usually in gray zone, where about 5, 10, 15, 20 people left, and usually they are very elderly people. No, nowhere to go and nothing to do because there's no any shops, even just to spend their money. If we, for example, replace it for financial support, like we did in some other locations, which are less vulnerable and a bit further from the contact line. So, yes, we're trying to move from this distribution of our food and hygiene parcels to financial assistance and to support of, let's call it, microeconomical initiatives when people can earn money by themselves and we support their business starts. And, of course, in some cases, we also provide some kind of consultations about how to start their business, just for you to understand. It's very small businesses.
Take me through the process of how it works exactly. Like, pretend I'm one of those aid workers on the ground. What am I doing with the fuel and the food? How am I getting it to these people?
All our system starts with assessing people's needs. Actually, we did it in 2014 mostly. And now we have just the list of our beneficiaries. If some people, if their, for example, life conditions has changed, of course, we put them in our list. But usually working with the local authorities to understand who we have to support. We have our internal rules and it's not like something to change.
For instance, what kind of fuel are you talking about? Is it that liquefied gas? And also, what kind of basic fuel?
No. If you, we have a separate program of, call it, winterization. It means preparation for winter. Because in this part of the world, as you know, being living in DC, that it's rather cold during winter time, a bit different from our other contexts, major in Africa or in Middle East, when we have no such program. But here in Ukraine, if you are living in your private house, you have to heat your habitat somehow. We distribute firewoods, like briquettes, and people actually happy with it. In some cases, we have financial supports and people can spend money for this. We have no medical assistance directly to people. We are assisting medical institutions because you never can understand and realize what kind of medical assistance people need. Actually, this is the doctor who have to realize this. That's why we are supporting medical institutions.
Alexander Vlasenko is the spokesperson for the ICRC, and he was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam. Ukraine's LGBTQ plus community is on high alert in the face of a potential Russian invasion. Under President Volodymyr Zelensky's government, they enjoy free speech and assembly protections, but fear discrimination if Ukraine falls under Moscow's authority. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has their story.
In contrast to Soviet times, pride marches have been held in Ukraine since 2015. Police escorts are present, thanks to President Volodymyr Zelensky's government, which backs free speech and assembly for the LGBT plus community. But the threat of a Russian invasion endangers that progress, says Freedom House. Carissa Jackson is the organization's senior program officer on the Dignity for All Emergency Assistance Program.
Russia is one of the most repressive countries in the Eurasia region when it comes to LGBT plus rights. Legal persecution, intimidation, kidnapping, murders, even, and other threats. Further Russian occupation of Ukraine could be devastating for these communities.
LGBT plus activists in Kyiv don't plan to remain idle. Timur Levchuk is the executive director of the NGO Fulcrum.
Many LGBT people and me want to join territorial defense. It's a group of people who are ready to protect our country. But these people are not military.
Even if war is averted, freedoms for the LGBT plus in Ukraine are limited, says activist Olena Shevchenko. She says tensions with Russia have overshadowed the LGBT push for equality, an uphill battle in Ukraine's parliament.
We are struggling to receive the anti-discrimination laws, hate crime laws, and then, of course, the marriage equality. Last year, for instance, that's more than 52 documented cases about the hate crimes towards LGBTQI people.
While denouncing discrimination, Sviatoslav Yurash, who co-chairs the Values Dignity Family Group in Ukraine's parliament, has reservations about laws against hate crime.
I see the extremes of introducing so-called hate crime legislation and the result of that. And that is something that infringes fundamental freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of conscience, freedom of association, and that is not something I want to see.
The power of religious groups can't be underestimated, especially when it comes to legalizing same-sex marriage.
Churches basically will be the instructor for this debate, because they are very much the progenitors of the idea of institutional marriage.
During a vigil in Washington, Ukrainian Catholic Church representative said there is room for dialogue on LGBT rights if there is peace in Ukraine.
We need Putin to stop his aggression and withdraw his 100,000 troops from in front of Ukraine so that the country can evolve and develop. Without that peace, there's no possibility of anybody to develop any real discourse.
Rachel Ivanchuk identifies as a transgender female and has distant relatives in Ukraine. She hopes peace will prevail and encourages Ukraine's LGBT plus community to keep fighting.
Even here in America, there are so many state legislatures that are either resisting or trying to roll back rights that have been granted to the LGBT community. And it's just important to keep an eye on what is going on and to keep pressuring legislators and government.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. You know, the news doesn't stop when this program ends, so be sure to stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine, as well as news from around the world 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. You can also find us on your favorite social media platform with pictures, videos, stories, and a whole lot more. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great night.